You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 22nd of March. The Hawks do to the Jazz what teams don't do. How are they able to get it done? And how big a deal was that loss in Atlanta last night? We'll break down the ballgame, look at the playoff projections, get you ready for Chicago. And it's a points gain Friday. A great suggestion from a listener leads us to points gain by position. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. I hope you're doing fabulously well today, enjoying your Friday and getting out there. Today's show is Locked On Jazz. It's your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers. It's available to you on the brand new app Himalaya. Download the app Himalaya, subscribe to Locked On Jazz, and see all the great things that Himalaya has, including all their new playlists and more. It's available for you. Also available on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and whatever app you might use. When you get in your car, you can tell your smart device, say keyword, and then play podcast Locked On Jazz. All right, we'll dig into last night's ballgame. I loved the suggestion I got from a listener to look at points gained by position. And we'll look at that. Today's show is brought to you by Homie, Murdoch Hyundai, and the Barbecue Pit Supply Store. I loved it yesterday. I think it was on the live show that somebody said they stopped by. You guys are so amazing. The Barbecue Pit Stop. Not Supply Store, just the Barbecue Pit Stop. You guys are so amazing, your support of our sponsors. I just can't thank you enough. All right, so last night, Atlanta did two things to Utah that the Jazz just don't generally allow. The Jazz are the number one team in the league at keeping teams out of transition. Atlanta plays a lot of transition, and they got out in transition last night. Actually, three things. Number two is that the Jazz don't allow three-point shots. They're the number one team in the league at not allowing threes. Jazz allowed 40 last night. And number three is that the Jazz usually have great shot distribution. And last night, the Jazz went the other way. So a little bit of give Atlanta credit, probably a level of when all three of those things are not your usual, does that mean that you were lacking a little focus? I didn't really feel that actually last night. Ron Boone had been saying to me all week that he thought that game was going to be the problem. Atlanta scores at a really high level. They come at you. They got young players. They're playing well. Lloyd Pierce has them going in the right direction. They play the game right. But let's look at it from an offensive standpoint, what happened. The Jazz took 30 mid-range shots last night. They got their 11 corner threes, and they happened to just hit 3 of 27. And they only hit 7 of 21 on their above-the-break threes. Both Kyle Korver and Jay Crowder had poor nights last night shooting. Atlanta had 30. The Jazz took 30 mid-range shots. Against the Knicks, they took 14. Against the Wizards, they took 24. Against Brooklyn, they did take 29. Against Minnesota, they took 14. Against Phoenix, they took 15. Against Oklahoma City, they took 14. Against Memphis, they took 10. So, I know we like to talk about, oh, we took too many threes. Actually, we didn't get enough threes last night. Atlanta drops the big, and the Jazz got 32 rim shots last night because actually the Jazz did a fabulous job last night of getting out in transition. But when teams drop that big, particularly actually Donovan has struggled, it's a little bit of a harder matchup for the Jazz to get all of their actions and the things they want to get. And Ricky came out really aggressive, a little surprisingly aggressive considering how he's been playing. Early in the game, took a bunch of early shots in the mid-range, kind of succumbing to the defense, seeing it as his opportunity to maybe score a lot because that dropping big gives the point guard that window in the mid-range and things like that. And the offense, and then they just, you know, kind of stayed with it. We're down one at half. Then they got down by 11 or one in one, got down by 11 at the half, worked their way back, took over the lead and then late just couldn't close. I don't know if fatigue was a part of it. There is the, I think, what is it, 77% of games are being won by home teams that have a rest advantage right now. You know, so the margin last night between the Jazz and the Hawks was probably not tremendous, and they were rested and we weren't, and we're better than they are, but we're on the road and probably not a huge amount better than, you know, I mean, that Kevin Huerter's going to be good. Wow. And the defense, I'm not surprised the offense struggled a little bit. We just haven't seen any resistance at all from anyone defensively in four of our last five games. You know, Phoenix, Minnesota, Washington, New York are all just terrible defensive teams, and so you didn't see a lot. But our defense wasn't great. We got riddled last night. So let's flip it to that for a second. The Jazz don't allow three-point shots. They just don't. And yet last night, Atlanta took the most three-point shots that anyone has taken against us in a regular game all year. And I might be franchise history. Makes it was close to franchise history, not takes. It was 40 takes. We just don't allow that. What was happening was Trae Young was getting into the paint, engaging Rudy, and then whether it was Dwayne Dedmon popping back, and now Rudy's engaged, where Trae Young's had 11 assists last night, 8 of them to 3-point shooters, 3 of them to Dwayne Dedmon. And, I mean, if you look through the year, by the way, the amount of last night, they took 46% of their field goal attempts as threes. We allow for the season, including blowout time, 31.9. The amount of teams we have not allowed a team to take the New York game kind of. We allowed two teams to get over 35 since the 27th of February. Milwaukee took 41% of their shots as threes. That's what they do. The Warriors took 46% of their shots as threes against us in January. We had a back-to-back game where Atlanta took 46 against us, the most anyone's taken all year, and then Houston did it the next night. But keeping Houston to 44 is actually pretty good. But we don't – this doesn't happen.
Excuse me.
Except for the fact that Atlanta does it to us twice, which is pretty interesting. And that is the value of having a spread floor. I mean, when you look at what Atlanta has, they got Trae Young coming off a pick and roll with everybody on the floor can shoot at about 37-38%. I mean, it's almost the exact opposite of what Donovan has every play. It's why, I don't necessarily think Donovan is a point guard, and he certainly doesn't have the natural instincts of Trae Young. His floor spacing is just not the same. Trae Young couldn't do what he's doing in Atlanta with us. John Collins is 36% as their power forward. Prince is 39%. Bazemore, who hit 4 out of 6 and was shooting 22% the last 5, is 31%. Dwayne Dedmon's 37%. Alex Len is 34% on 150 attempts. I like him. He's a free agent at the end of the year. Kevin Huerter, I don't know if he'd be interested in being Rudy's backup, but boy, that'd be incredible. Kevin Huerter, 38%. Malcolm Bembry doesn't play much, can't shoot. Vince Carter, 41%. Omari Spellman, who was not playing last night because of injury, 34%. I mean, every guy they have on their worst shooter is Bazemore. Their second worst shooter is Trae Young. And so they're able to spread the floor, pop everybody out, let Young go to work. And when they got 4 spaced and Young in the middle of the paint, that evidently is a really difficult matchup for us. All right, we'll look at the playoff implication of that and what we just did to ourselves in the race. I started this whole thing way back saying the Jazz are going to go about 17-3 to get home court. They've lost all 3. So that is going to be, you know, this is going to be a difficult little stretch if we think we're going to pull this thing off. Today's show is brought to you in part by Homie. Homie is revolutionizing the real estate world. For years and years, well, really forever. So, well, agents just get their 6%. Like, oh, we just do it. It's just we accept it. This is how it is. Why? Why? Well, there's really no good reason for it. Why is it that if you actually did the job and remodeled part of your house and spent a bunch of money and makes the house better and easier to sell, the agent should get more money? That doesn't make sense. So instead, Homie is assigning a whole team to you and giving you one set fee. It's $1,500 to list your house. If you're selling a $300,000 house, $600,000 house, $800,000 house, $150,000 house, it's all the same. $1,500 to list. It's that simple. And they're putting a team of people behind you. And that team right now is showing success. Selling houses at higher than the market value and selling houses faster. What else could you ask for? Find out more about Homie by texting LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. That's LOCK to 88588. More about Homie to 88588. Text LOCK. Whichever way your brain works, I didn't know. I just thought it'd reverse in there. See if it works for you. Who knows? Homie, revolutionizing the real estate model and saving you huge amounts of money in equity. Today's show is also brought to you by the Barbecue Pit Stop. Three locations in Layton and Linden and the brand new one at 1300 South and 300 West. All right, if you're into barbecue and you have not met Kennedy yet, you have to do it. Kennedy is up in the Linden store, and Kennedy has the most incredible passion for barbecue and which rubs you're combining and what sauces you might use and how you're going to set up on the grill. And if we're doing chicken, we're doing these rubs. And his eyes just light up, and he gets so excited. But that's Kennedy is the essence of the Barbecue Pit Stop. It is, if you're a golfer, your perfect golf store. If you're a fly fisherman, your perfect fly fish store. If you're a skier, it would be like having the most passionate equipment junkie there showing me every ski and jacket and new goggle and new glove, and it's all at the Barbecue Pit Stop. They have the grills top to bottom everywhere you might, every type you might want. They showed me the Yoders, which look incredible. They're a little geeky. They got some number stuff to them. I might have to get that. They have the rubs and sauces, a wall of just rubs and rubs and rubs and tasting them and trying them and mixing different things and Kennedy's master plans, and then a whole sauce taste testing area. Plus, they do events and things. You get their selection, you get their expertise, and really what you get is you get a barbecue buddy for life. It's all at the Barbecue Pit Stop at 1300 South and 3rd West. Also in Linden and in Layton. Check it out. It's the Barbecue Pit Stop. All right, let's take a look at what damage we did to ourselves last night. You know, the thing that we talked about all this whole time is that you're not winning every single game you're a favorite. You know, if you're a favorite and you're a 60% favorite or you're a 65% favorite, you know, that means you win 6 or 7 out of 10. You'd like to make it 8 out of 10 this time of season, but it's what we've been talking about with our playoff push, and the numbers we're showing you is that so far coming in, I haven't done last night yet, but the 80 to 100% games, the teams are 19-3. Okay, they're winning those. The should-win games, which is probably last night for the Jazz, teams are winning 65% of those games. A little lower than we thought, which is 70. The pick'em games, the teams in the playoff push are 14-15. The unlikely games is where teams are thriving. They're 13-8, winning games that you're just not really regularly supposed to win. So let's walk through last night. There was limited games. Denver was a 69% win probability against the Washington Wizards. They win that. Denver goes to 4-1 in those games. And the Jazz were a 71% win probability to the Hawks. That's pretty. And this is where the Jazz are losing their grip. They're 4-3 in games that had a win probability between 60 and 80. You've got to be a little better than that. And the Kings beat the Mavericks last night. We'll keep the Kings kind of in this for maybe, I don't know. I don't know why, but. And that was a 65 win. So now 24-13, winning two-thirds of those. That's exactly what happened last night. But that's where the Jazz have lost. You know, to the other angle on this is 60-80 win probability. You should be winning 70% of those games. And so far in the second half of the season, we've only won 57%. So That's considerable disappointment. We've cost ourselves in this playoff push with some of these. We have the Bulls at 75% coming up here. We have a bunch of 80-plus percent games after that. Suns back at 77. Still should be running through this thing a little bit here, but that's there aren't a lot of losses on the board after last night, so it's too bad that last night didn't happen. All right, let's roll through and see. We'll start with our buddies at 538. I'm going to bring a new group in called Unpredictable and look at their projections as well. Still Warriors 1, Nuggets 2, Rockets 3, no real change there. The Blazers are at 51 now for the 4th seed. The Jazz are the 5th seed at 50 wins. The Thunder are 6 at 48. Clippers and Spurs at 47. Giving possibility of... I really don't want Houston. I'll tell you that. That's the one that if I had my choice, we could avoid. I just don't feel as though it's a matchup we can handle very well. Or anyone, frankly. I think Golden State's the only team that can beat them. ESPN now has it as Golden State and Denver with Houston at 51 and Portland at 51. Us at 49 now. Oklahoma City at 48. San Antonio at 48. Clippers at 48. I mean, that one is the nerve-wracking model right there. That's the one that has all of a sudden you fall from 5 to 8 in a hurry if you screw up another one. So you've got to be a little careful on that. Let's go to the Unpredictable site, which I haven't used in a while, so let me see if I can pull it up really quickly. They do a nice thing where what they do is they look at the possibility of your seeding at each of each draft position, and that I think is kind of a nice way to look at, you know, what are our chances right now to do each of the various draft playoff positions along the way. Though I cannot, their site, Mike does an incredible job. But I actually cannot find. Oh, it's because it's under rankings. All right. Here's the projected seed update daily for you. Let's see if I can find it. I'm screwing this up. He redid the site recently and has moved everything along. So our projected seeds right now, according to Unpredictable, are 35% for the 4 seed, 31% for the 5 seed, 8% for the 6 seed, 4% for the 7 seed, and 1% for the 8 seed. Denver is 79% the 2 seed. Houston is 37% the 3rd seed. Portland is 34% the 3rd seed, 25% the 4th seed, and 24% the 5th seed. OKC is most likely the 8th seed at 30%, the 7th seed at 29%, or the 6th seed at 22%. Pretty interesting. So, again, Utah, according to Unpredictable, 35% the 4th seed, 31% the 5th seed. And I believe that includes last night's loss. That says as of March 22nd. So we screwed it up last night, but it happens. It's not good, though. But they got us. There's nothing. Kind of feels like the Memphis game. They're just better than us most of the night. Today's show is brought to you in part by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. I've told you about Hyundai a lot, and hopefully you've got, you know, it's been an eye-opener for me. I didn't know a lot about Hyundai when I sat down with the Murdochs and got to know them. I didn't know the Murdochs. Now feel like pretty good friends with Blake. Gotten to know Tyson really well. Enjoy his company as well. The brothers are just good dudes. You can tell the family takes a tremendous pride in servicing Utah and interacting with Utahns and giving you an experience that makes you feel as though you were represented by the Murdochs when you went through? The next aspect of it is what I found out about the Hyundai car. You just get more for your dollar than you do other places. It's why we ended up buying a Hyundai Santa Fe. Whether it's the little Kona, which is the fun, zippy SUV that's a kind of smaller, like the Subaru Crosstrek, whether it's the Tucson or whether it's the Santa Fe, you just get great value. So I'm not going to, you know, you can decide what you want to do, but I would suggest if you're in the market for a car that you at least consider Hyundai. If it's not a brand you've considered before, they're on the cutting edge of safety. The car I'm driving right now has a back seat, that back door that doesn't open if a car is coming. Automatically closes to save kids from opening up the car into traffic. Those are the type of technology things that break through. That's why Hyundai does a great job. And then also you get so much for your dollar. Check it out at Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. Points gained Friday. I thought this was a great idea. I got a listener who said, can you break down points gained instead of like top 10, all those things, by position? So, yeah, let's do it. By the way, Giannis has now surpassed Steph for the number one offensive player in the league this year, which makes that MVP candidate seem pretty real. So point guard, the top five point guards in points gained, Steph Curry and James Harden are both point guards, classified as point guards, and 3.0. Points gained is points above average that you score with your possessions on a night. So Steph Curry uses 22 scoring opportunities a night, and he averages 3.4 points better than what an average player would do. My premise is stay away from below average offensive players. So Steph is, and I've put a filter in here, by the way, that we're only looking at players who play more than 15 minutes a night. I just feel like that's a real rotation player. So Steph's number one, Harden's number two by a large margin. Then Dame number three, Kyrie number four, and Malcolm Brogdon number five. So that's a free agent. Someone's going to spend a lot of money for Malcolm Brogdon, who's having a 50-40-90 season. The surprise name next is DJ Augustine. DJ Augustine is having an incredible year in Orlando. Spencer Dinwiddie in Brooklyn. Darren Collison is always pretty good in Indiana, but we're now down to 0.4. This is where, as critical as we can all be of Rubio's shooting, if he goes to the free throw line and gets to average, really most point guards are about, this is why this is such a great question, 0.4 to like negative 0.4 is almost every point guard. There are only, the only point guards above 0.4 are Steph Curry, James Harden, Dame Lillard, Kyrie, Malcolm Brogdon, DJ Augustine, Spencer Dinwiddie, Landry Shamet, who might be more of a two, Darren Collison, and then Eric Bledsoe, Monty Morris, Mike Conley are all at 0.3, Patty Mills. The rest of them are all kind of right in at average. Drew Holiday's negative 0.1. Then the guys, once you get below negative 0.5, now you're dealing with guys, because it's pretty hard to find positive players, who are really having a negative impact. So that's Jordan Clarkson, DeLon Wright, surprisingly, in Memphis, Jeff Teague, who's shut down for the season. Trae Young still, but that's fine. He's a rookie. Jamal Murray in Denver is a little surprising. Terry Rozier, who everybody will talk about in the offseason, minus one. Little surprised and disappointed to see that Corey Joseph is there. I've always been a Corey Joseph fan. But Corey Joseph's only going to line 2.9 possessions a game. Ricky Rubio, minus 1.1. D'Angelo Russell, minus 1.1. High usage, if you need usage. It's good. John Wall, minus 1.2. Lonzo Ball, minus 1.5, Dennis Schroeder, minus 1.9, and Russell, minus 2.7, just by far the most negative impacted offensive player. Frank Ntilikina there. So, and then the other question that the listener asked was, well, what guys are undervalued? I'd say Darren Collison continues to be undervalued. DJ Augustine, Malcolm Brogdon, obviously we talked about. Other players who maybe have a little bit more value than they're given credit for. Probably that's it, frankly. All right, let's go to shooting guards. It is so hard to be an efficient shooting guard in the league. This is what you find out here. This is why, again, such a great question. Bradley Beal is number one in the NBA shooting guards, 1.1. Malik Beasley in Denver is number two, despite not going to the free throw line at all, probably unlikely to replicate. J.J. Redick is 2. Buddy Hield is 3. Danny Green, 4. They had Ben Simmons as a shooting guard. He should be a point guard. Devin Booker is 5. By the way, they have Thomas Satoransky as a shooting guard here, so some of the position stuff needs to be fixed. I like him a lot. Satoransky, 0.6 plus, goes to the line a pretty good amount. Big, long. I would be interested in talking about Satoransky on my team if I was a general manager. Klay Thompson, 0.6. Kyle Korver, 0.5 next. Vince Carter, crazy enough, 0.3. Is that amazing? He's, like, literally good. He's not just playing because he's Vince Carter. He's literally good. C.J. McCollum's right on average. And, again, only one regular Malik Beasley, Bradley Beal, J.J. Redick, Buddy Hield, the only ones over one. This is my point all the time. These negative offensive players are so disturbing to your offense because there's so few really positive offensive players that make you above average that when you suddenly have somebody who gives you a negative one, you're like wiping out Bradley Beal, who's the best shooting guard in the league. Now, you have to have somebody use your possessions. And so if you don't have anybody who uses your possessions, then if someone's eating up 24 possessions a game and they're negative, it's not the end of the world. Dwayne Wade is the Tyreek Evans and Dwayne Wade are the two lowest. Victor Oladipo is not having a good year. Donovan's at the bottom, negative 1.3. Avery Bradley, the bottom. DeMar DeRozan, minus 0.8. Eric Gordon, minus 0.7. So who is an undervalued shooting guard in the league? Well, Malik Beasley, but I don't think I would be nervous about that at 3.1 free throw attempts. Danny Green probably still very undervalued. Great pickup by Toronto. You know, for all the heat Kentavious Caldwell-Pope gets, he is actually above average. Etuan Moore in New Orleans is one I've always liked. Doesn't go to the line much, 4.2%. Luke Kennard is now an even player, but only 4.6%. Guys, just don't go to the line. Devin Booker goes to the line 12% of his possessions. Alonzo Trier in New York goes 13%, which is impressive. David Nwaba in Cleveland goes 13%. That's an interesting one. If he could ever figure out how to shoot, he's only a 30% shooter. Lou Williams, so great because he goes 14% of his possessions to the line. But not a lot of great positive offensive players there. Go to the small forwards. And again, I apologize some of the listing I use out of Doug Stats for the Durant's the best at 2.9. Danilo Gallinari second. Then Kawhi Leonard at 2.1. Joe Harris, 1.7. Indiana's Bojan Bogdanović, who's a free agent at 1.5. Just be great. 10% free throw, 29% of his shots are threes. Paul George, 1.3, is sixth. Jeff Green is having a great year in Washington. Rudy Gay is probably a power forward, but Davis Bertans is, so they call Gay a small forward. 0.8. Jeremy Grant in Oklahoma City, 0.7. Doug McDermott in Indiana really can't defend, but really can shoot it. TJ Warren in Phoenix doesn't shoot a lot of threes, though he started to this year at 25% of his shots and is at 0.6. That'd be interesting if they're willing to move off him. Zach LaVine is now a positive player. Jimmy Butler's a positive. So the small forward, three guys are over 2, 4 guys are over 1, and then a lot of guys are over 0.5. Royce O'Neal now at 0.3. Otto Porter at 0.2. We'll see Otto Porter coming up. Undervalued guy that might be better than people realize. Bojan Bogdanović, Indiana, certainly. Doug McDermott, Indiana, maybe. TJ Warren, Phoenix. Jake Layman's playing very well in Portland. That change from Evan Turner to Jake Layman has been big. Torian Prince in Atlanta's positive 0.5. Norman Powell, Toronto, is positive this year with some good metrics. They might be willing to get off that deal. Chris Middleton, for all the love and talk of him, putting up the big points, is a negative 0.1. Interesting. The worst, Andrew Wiggins, negative 0.9, Kevin Knox, Josh Jackson in Phoenix. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is probably power forward. Stanley Johnson, Mario Hezonja, who's probably playing power forward at this point. Not really. Jaylen Brown minus 0.4, but nobody on the small forwards other than who you kind of knew in Andrew Wiggins. It's also what makes Andrew Wiggins so terrible. Let's look at power forwards. By the way, an interesting one I didn't mention earlier that I meant to. Kemba Walker's a minus 0.3, and someone's going to max him out in the offseason. Chris Middleton's a minus 0.1. Someone's going to max him out in the offseason. Giannis, if he's classified, I don't know what he is, his number one power forward. John Collins is 2. Montrezl Harrell is 3. Dwight Powell is 4. Favors, I think, should be in here. I think Favors can be listed as a center, though, which he probably is for most of the night, so that's probably right. Dwight Powell. I like Dwight Powell a lot. That'd be high on my list of guys we're talking about. Anthony Davis, Pascal Siakam, Tobias Harris, Domantas Sabonis, probably a center most of the time. LeBron. Derek Favors is listed here at 1.2 after that. Blake Griffin, 1.0. Kelly Olynyk, another one I like. Think he's undervalued, 0.9. 41% of his shots is threes, 11% going to the free throw line. Like that a lot. Taj Gibson, surprisingly still positive. Al Horford, Cody Zeller in Charlotte. Most of these guys stay positive. Mark Saldridge, 0.6. Paul Millsap, 0.5. Marvin Bagley, 0.5. Serge Ibaka, 0.5. And Bielitsa, plus 3. A negative power forward. You don't see a lot of them. Marvin Williams is right on league average. Never goes to the free throw line. His three-point shooting slipped a tiny, but he really has to be about a 40%er. Kyle Kuzma is a minus 0.4. Jay Crowder's a minus 0.5. Draymond's a minus 0.6, but of power forwards, negative points gained, Trey Lyles is the worst in the NBA at minus 1. Aaron Gordon, 0.8. DJ Wilson, minus 0.6. Draymond Green, minus 0.6. Markieff Morris, minus 0.6. Jay Crowder, minus 0.5. Mike Scott, minus 0.5. Amari Spellman, minus 0.5 as a rookie. Bobby Portis, minus 0.5. Jonathan Isaac, minus 0.5. Those are the power forwards with the negative points gained. And let's go to our that play at least 15 minutes. And let's go to our centers. And this is where the value of the rim roller shows. Rudy, 2.7. Karl Anthony Towns, 2.6. Clint Capella, 2.7. DeAndre, Jonas Valanciunas, the fifth best offensive player center. It's where the Marcus Gasol trade, I'm just not convinced. It wasn't at the time. Thomas Bryant, Washington's been good. Joel Embiid, 1.5 is great. DeAndre Ayton's been good. Julius Randle, they have listed as a center. He's probably power forward. Increases his value. Still only shoots 13% of his possessions as threes, but he's just good. Nikola Jokic. Negative centers are hard to come by. Like, you should be an efficient offensive center. Marc Gasol is the worst offensive center in the NBA, or has the largest negative impact. Hassan Whiteside, Mo Bamba, Willie Cauley-Stein, Alex Len, who we saw last night, did look good. I kind of liked him. But and then DeMarcus Cousins. That is your points game. Thanks for the suggestion. I thought that was a neat way to do it. Thanks to Murdoch Hyundai, to Barbecue Pit Stop, and to Homie for sponsoring the show. Tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA. Sam Amick was on with Anthony Irwin. It's an awfully good one today, so make sure you grab that. Have a great one. Big day for Locked On Podcast Network on Monday. Wait for the announcement. It's coming. See ya.